D. In January 1935, a man checked into a hotel in Kansas City, but he never checked out. Because a few days later, he was dead. But his death has raised a lot more questions. Who was this man? And who killed him? Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Empty Promise Podcast. My name is Chris, and today I am joined across the table by my best friend in the whole wide world, Mr. James D. Downey.
Hello!
D, thank you for joining me on what is episode 136.
We think. I'm pretty confident.
I'm confident we're on 136. Did you like my little intro there? Mm.
I love the intro.
Are you excited?
We're getting good at that.
Aren't we?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm pushing a button, but you're getting good at it.
No, but we could... See, we could do this in post. We could press that button in post and bring the sound in, but we like to do things live.
We do it live.
We like to take many, many goes.
Yeah. Where's the fun in that?
Exactly. Know? Well, Dee, as previously mentioned, today we're going to talk about the mystery of room 1046.
Mm.
Some people know it as the murder in room 146, but there's more of a mystery to this than just a murder.
Which is always... That's where the juice is, Chris.
That's where the juice is. That's where the good stuff is. So if you're ready, and if everybody else is ready, I'm going to just get stuck into this.
Yes,
you happy enough?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
On Wednesday, January 2nd, 1935, at around 1:20 p.m., a man calling himself Roland T. Owen checked into the Hotel President in Kansas City in room 1046. Witnesses say he was aged between 20 to 35, with brown hair, a scar on his scalp visible above his ear, and a cauliflower ear. He was also dressed in a nice black coat.
Hmm.
Okay. Set the scene for you.
Thank you. Okay. Yeah.
20 to 35, though.
What a range. Like, what's going on there?
There's 15 years there. Like,
but then, I kind of know what they mean, because this guy walking with a big cauliflower ear and he's well dressed. Mm. Like, he probably looks like he's dressed like he's older.
I was between 18 and 40. You know?
Could have been male, female, or non-binary. I really, I'm not the best person to help with this.
The bellboy at this hotel, named Randolph Probst. We're going to have so many good names in this.
Already? Roland?
Roland.
Randolph.
And Randolph. Randolph is a cool name.
I don't know.
Randolph. What's your name? Randolph. No?
I don't know.
Not telling it?
Okay. I'm not hearing it. I'm not feeling it.
Well, Randolph Probst helped Owen to his room, where he reported that Owen seemed to have only packed a brush, a comb, and toothpaste.
Suspicious, like.
Right, already.
Yeah, this already. Is already, yeah.
Because, like, who checks into a hotel just for those things?
He's in the
maybe, well, maybe he's just doing, like, a quick stopover. Do you know what I mean? Maybe he's, I'm only here for a night, and then I'll go.
Doing a little layover, maybe.
Well, the maid at the time, Mary Soptic, said that Owen allowed her to clean while he was in the room, but asked that she not lock the door on her way out because his friend was coming to visit the room very soon. She also said that Owen kept the shades tightly drawn and the lights off, with the exception of one dim lamp.
What?
Other staff members who had also been in the room also mentioned that detail as well. In her statement to the police, Soptic felt that Owen was, quote, either worried about something or afraid. He always wanted to be kept in the dark.
That's very weird.
Strange, isn't it?
It's weird that if he was so afraid, he let, like, the housekeeper in and all and let her work away, but just sat there in the fucking dark.
Like, to me, it kind of screams already. Like, I know we're only, like, a couple of paragraphs in, but it's like, this guy's hiding in a room. He's hiding from someone, you know?
Is he a little bit... Is he being potentially paranoid? Mm. Well... Probably not, considering it sounds like it's the murder in room 1046.
So maybe he had every reason to be paranoid. Well, at around 4 p.m., Soptic, the maid, returned with fresh towels and found Owen lying on the bed, completely dressed, with the door unlocked, as well as a note that read, "Dawn, I will be back in 15 minutes. Wait." Okay?
Dawn.
D-A-W-N. D-O-N.
Dawn. Like, oh, like a man's name, like, a man. Like Donatello.
Like, oh yeah, Donatello.
Or Donald.
The Dawn. The Dawn, yeah. Or the Dawn of the family.
Okay,
yeah.
I said Mafia. Mm-hmm. Kansas City Mafia, that's what I said.
This is the thing, right? Kansas City, so he checked into, in Kansas City, but Kansas City...
It's not in Kansas.
No, it's in Missouri. I believe.
I love
it's
America.
So strange, isn't it?
Isn't there like two of them as well?
Yeah.
There's like another one that's in...
in Kansas?
Maybe.
Or Arkansas.
Arkansas.
I don't know. Well, the next day, January 3rd, 1935, at 10:30 a.m., Soptic came to the room to clean, and she noticed that the door had been locked from the outside. So these rooms, by the way, only locked from the outside. Real weird back in the day. Like, rooms wouldn't lock from the inside.
I was going to say with this, whenever he asked her not to lock the door, I'm like, don't the doors just lock?
No.
But I guess, yeah, this is like... what year is this?
1935.
Oh, right. Yeah, I didn't even pick up. Yeah,
but it's super strange. Imagine not being able to lock your hotel room from the inside. Someone has to lock it from the outside. Lock you in. It's just, it's so bizarre.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's almost as if like nobody ever locked doors apart from maybe the owners of hotels and things like that. I suppose
if you're in a hotel, you're like, I'm already indoors. Like the front door of the hotel is locked, so whatever.
Well, she assumed that Owen had locked it when he was leaving the room. However, when she went in, he was sitting inside once again with the lights off. Meaning somebody else had locked the door from the outside.
Okay.
Now, while she was in the room, Owen answered the phone, in which she had responded, "No, Dawn, I don't want to eat. I just had breakfast." Which he then repeated later, "No, I'm not hungry." Once again, around 4 p.m., Soptic returned to deliver fresh towels, where she heard two male voices from inside the room. When she knocked, a rough voice, as she described, responded with, "Who is it?" To which she explained that she was bringing fresh towels. The voice said, "We don't need any," even though there hadn't been any towels in the room. Things began to get strange when a woman who was staying in room 1048 reported hearing loud voices, both male and female, occurring on the same floor, although it said that there had been a party going on in room 1055 that night.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
They're 1046.
Yep.
And then...
a woman said 10:48.
And then there's 10:55 having a party.
10:55, yeah.
Okay.
January 4th, 1935, at around 7 a.m., the hotel phone operator noticed that Owen's hotel room phone had been going off for quite a while. The bellboy, Propst, was sent to go and check out Owen's room, where he heard a low voice say, "Come in, turn on the lights." Despite the door being locked, as well as a do not disturb sign, and... nobody got up to let Propst in when he got there.
Okay.
This guy, Propst, came into the room and told Owen, put the phone back on the hook.
Oh, yeah.
The phone wasn't on the hook. So he came up to tell him, which again, super strange. Why would you tell someone just to put the phone on? I don't know.
Oh, back in the day, it probably cost them like...
oh, maybe.
A lot.
But don't phone the room, maybe.
You know, but they're not phoning the room. He's phoning somebody.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Good point.
Maybe the lines are tied up or something.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, because it's weird. Back in the day, there would have been like an actual operator.
Yeah.
Who would have had to like plug stuff in. Yeah, that's so weird. Like, an hour and a half later, Harold Pike, another bellboy at the hotel, let himself into the room with the pass key using only the hallway lights. Upon entering, Pike noticed that Owen was in bed, naked, seemingly drunk, as well as the bedding being darkened around Owen. Pike fixed the phone, which was once again kicked over, and put the phone back on the receiver. So phones come off the receiver again. These guys are obsessed with their phones being on receivers. Between 10:30 and 10:45 a.m., the phone was once again out of the receiver and sending Props back up to the room again to resolve the situation. However, when he opened the door, what he saw was a truly horrific scene. To get an idea of the scene, this is what Prop said in his statement. "When I entered the room, the man was within 2 feet of the food we had left, on his hands and his knees and his elbows, holding his head in his hands. I noticed blood on his head, and then I turned the light on. I looked around and saw blood on the walls, blood on the bed, and blood in the bathroom. This frightened me, and I immediately left the room and went downstairs."
Yeah.
Okay.
That's wild. Okay. That's insane.
So he must have went downstairs, and they must have got like somebody else to come up, or maybe, I'm not sure if they rang the authorities at this point yet, possibly, because Owen was then discovered in the room with extensive injuries. He had been tied up with cord around his neck, wrists, and ankles. He had been hit repeatedly on the head, and he had a skull fracture. He had been stabbed multiple times in the chest and had a punctured lung. and there was bruising around the neck, indicating he was possibly strangled.
Jesus.
Now, my first impression of all this was maybe he was strangled with that fucking phone cord. You know, yeah. That's why it was always off the hook. But somebody would have seen this with all the checks.
Yeah, but like, what time did they come up the first time to check the phone off the hook? Like 7 a.m.
7 a.m.
And then they come back up at 10:45. Yeah. Or something between 10:30 and 10:45. And this has all happened.
Yeah.
And 10 or 7 a.m. it was like he was just lying there drunk.
He was lying there naked, seemingly passed out on the bed with a dark patch around the bed.
What the hell happened?
Now, this is strange. Despite the fatality of his injuries, Owen was still alive at this point.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah. One of the detectives that arrived on the scene asked Owen about anyone else who had been in the room, to which he responded, nobody.
We know that's a lie.
Although he was hardly capable of talking and not fully conscious, he proceeded to explain that he had fallen against the bathtub. After the brief exchange of conversation, Owen fell completely unconscious and was taken to the hospital. According to the doctor, the injuries to Owen's body had occurred 6 to 7 hours prior to him being discovered. Police found no weapons or any of Owen's belongings in the room, therefore removing suicide from the equation. 4 fingerprints were lifted off the phone, and one of them stood potentially as a female. Owen died shortly after midnight on January 5th, 1936. According to the hotel, they said that Owen had mentioned that he was from Los Angeles. However, LA authorities were unable to find any records ever of a Ronald T. Owen.
Okay.
This information brought up the question of whether that was actually the victim's real name.
Mm-hmm.
Police then began to investigate the mysterious man who Owen had referred to as Don several times at the hotel. However, once again, police came up with nothing. After the announcement of the burial, so after Owen's taken away and he's buried, the funeral home received an anonymous call saying that they would pay for Owen's to have a proper funeral. So he was just going to be buried in like a, I forget what it's called, I looked into this, it's like a...
It's like a government thing where they're like...
Like a big plot where they just bury like unclaimed victims.
Yeah.
Like, it's pretty like, grim. Like,
yeah, yeah. Just, there's no one to see. Yeah, there's no
like
one to see.
Like a mass grave.
Yeah. But it's like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not pleasant.
Well, this anonymous call says they will pay for Owens to have a proper funeral, which was pretty pricey back then too.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
On March 23rd, 1935, money bundled inside a newspaper was sent to the funeral home from an anonymous sender, as well as funeral flowers, along with a card that said, "Love forever, Louise."
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we've Don and Louise.
Yeah.
All right, and Roland.
Roland. And we're still no closer to even understanding what's going on in this
place. But this is some shitty business.
Isn't
like,
it?
Yeah, already.
Yeah. So we're going to fast forward here, Dee, to a year and a half later, to 1936, when a friend of Ruby Ogletree...
God, these names are terrific.
...found an American Weekly... So American Weekly is like a magazine in the States.
Oh, yeah, okay.
American Weekly piece on Owen's case, which led Ruby to identify Ronald T. Owen as her own son, who left Birmingham in 1934, and whose real name is actually Artemus Ogletree, and was 17 years old.
What? He gave up the name Artemis?
I know. Yeah, I know. That honestly, I thought that Artemis is such a fucking cool name. Like
Artemus Ogletree, going by Roland Owen. Roland T.
Owen.
Why is he using a
fake
name?
And he was 17 years old.
And they thought he was anywhere between... So that was in 34. He died in 35 mm-hmm. or 36?
Yeah, 1935
and
he died.
He's at the... Oldest, he's 20. Mm-hmm. And people were anywhere between 20 and 35.
35, yeah. And people looked older back then, I suppose.
Well, like, yeah, I suppose.
Ruby had received 3 type letters from her son in the spring of 1935. However, these were delivered after his death, which led to more suspicion, being as though Artemis... The main suspicion of this was the fact that Artemis did not know how to type, as well as the tone of the letter seemed to be slangy and unfamiliar, according to Ruby. It was later revealed that she had stayed at the St. Regis in Kansas City with another man. in the early 2000s. So into the 2000s here.
Hold on, like, so this is the mother?
The mother.
Okay.
In the early 2000s, a man named John Honer received an out-of-state call about Artemis Ogletree, claiming to have found a box containing newspaper articles about the murder, as well as something else that had been referenced in the papers as a deceased person's belonging. The caller, unfortunately, did not say what the item was. The case would no longer move forward after that, and it has led to several theories to discuss. The first theory is that the man referred to as Don beat Artemis to death in a room in 1046. He acted alone. Somebody called Don, found him, beat him to death.
Friend, it seemed like. Yeah. Like he was inviting him down for dinner and all this.
Something had went wrong. Remember somebody also said that they had overheard voices shouting at each other in the room?
A man and a woman.
The second theory is that Don didn't act alone. That this theory came about due to an observation made by an elevator operator that night of the murder, Charles Blotcher. Blotcher claims to have seen a commercial woman going to the 10th floor. He described her as 5.5 feet, 135 pounds, with dark hair. He claims this woman was looking for room 1026 to meet a man she was unable to find, calling for speculation that maybe she had mistaken the room numbers.
Yeah.
She had also been seen with a man that was at the same height and weight as the woman on the 9th floor. Some say that may have been Dawn.
Right, so okay.
This woman was seen with a man who matched the description. That matched the description of Dawn. And this Dawn description came from a woman on the 9th floor.
Oh, I see. Okay. Okay, so yeah, potentially we have our two.
This theory isn't completely out there. If you recall earlier, I told you that there was fingerprints lifted from a phone.
One of
them were possibly a woman's fingerprints.
Yes. And there was a woman's voice
heard
in an argument.
Or
a party.
Yes.
I suppose.
One wee second. I've actually just lost my page.
I still can't believe you gave up the name Artemis, Chris.
Yeah, so...
That's all I'll say.
Perfect. I'm trying to get my notes back up here. I'm so sorry. Okay, so information developed through the police's conversations that they had with Ruby Ogletree, which was Artemis's mother, and they helped them. So nothing came from that apart from the fact that they found out that the mother had stayed with. In St. Regis in another hotel room with another man. Remember I told you that previously?
In 1937,
the New York City police arrested a man named Joseph Martin on a murder charge after he had killed a man he shared a room with and put the body into a trunk to be shipped to Memphis. Along with the several aliases he was found to have used was Donald Kelso. The story about... the case ran in the New Yorker, and the KCPD, or the Kansas City Police Department, had matched samples of his handwriting to that in the letters written to Ruby Ogletree. So they arrested a man in 1937 who had killed a man. In a hotel room. And he went he had loads of aliases, so loads of fake names and personas made up. But one of them he went by was Donald Kelso. And this guy was saying Don.
Yeah. Okay, interesting. Now, I have one question, because I thought at one point that the letters were typed. Like they were...
like a typewriter?
Yeah, a typewriter.
Well, that's true, actually, yeah.
Unless he hand-wrote some of them as well.
Well, this is the thing. The letters that came from... what do you call the guy that died? Artemis, to his mother... Were typed, but the letters from his mother to, is that right? The letters from mother handwriting, oh no, to Ruby Ogletree. Sorry, yeah, that's right. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. I'd say there must have been some. Well, obviously, if they're doing handwriting analysis, they must have handwritten letters as well.
Well,
but either way, both, like, the letters weren't. They didn't sound like her son was what she was claiming.
Well, no charges were filed against the man for the Ogletree case.
He did murder that other guy, though.
And the KSEPD kept the case open. The files show that different detectives reviewed the case every few years through the 1950s. However, each time they noted that they would keep the case open and follow up, but no new evidence was uncovered, and gradually the case went cold. The absence of suspects in the case has developed theories to rise right from the 1950s right through to when this caller rang and said that they had a box of personal items. However, the caller never gave a name. Mm-hmm. And that in 2000 and what did I say? Early 2000s. I don't actually have the exact date. It was just early 2000s. Was the last that the case was ever touched on. And to this day, the case of Artemis Ogletree's death in room 1046 is still unsolved.
I've got so many questions.
So do I. Let's start firing out a couple of theories that we have and suggestions, because it kind of leaves, the whole case is kind of just left wide open.
I think this Donald guy, or whatever his actual name is, known as, in alias as Donald.
Donald Kelso?
Kelso.
Mm-hmm.
It had to be him. Like,
you think so?
Right? Like, it had to be him. Because the writing matches. Okay, the handwritten stuff isn't very, I know that, like, today, that would never be, like, you'd never use that in, like, a court case, because it's, like, it's just not very,
it wouldn't stand up, yeah.
Yeah. But it's something. And there were these letters been written to his mother by someone who she didn't think was her son.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of adds up. He killed a man in a hotel room, which, like, I mean, would you really do that twice? I think that's like a, I keep getting mob vibes, Chris.
Yeah.
Like this is like, this is how we take people out. You invite them up to a hotel room, make them friends. You're like, I'm going to take this fucker out tonight. And then kill him in the hotel room, take him down the, I don't know, bribe a bellhop and get him to take him down to the basement, and then ship him off to Memphis, which I don't know why they're sending bodies off to Memphis.
That's it. There's too many unanswered questions about this, and that's why it's one of the biggest cases to have ever gone unsolved, because the main question is who killed him, why was he killed, and what exactly happened in 1046 that night. Was Don this rough sounding man? Who the hell was Louise?
Yeah,
that sent the who paid for the funeral and sent a card saying, what was it, like, Love Always or something, Louise?
Apparently.
And the thing that annoys me the most about this case, when I did the research for it, D, and listened to a couple of different podcasts, everybody said the same thing. Why did somebody call and say that they had helping itemize? So the person said that they had been helping itemize the belongings of an elderly person who had recently died. This is 2000s. So this leads me to believe that the person who had these belongings was alive at the time, obviously, of this case back in the 1930s. Yeah, so at that point, maybe they were maybe young in their 20s, maybe. Mm-hmm,
yeah.
They've gone right. Could be 80s, 90s by the time the 2000s come, okay?
Was it Louise?
Exactly. They find a box with several newspaper clippings about the case. And the caller, the person who made this anonymous call, said that besides the newspaper clippings, something mentioned in the newspaper stories was also in the box. So something that had been mentioned in the newspaper stories about this case was also in this box, but the caller refrained from telling
who it was or what was
in the box. Why?
I think it's a family member of potentially that woman. Okay. Speculation time. All right. This is my theory.
Okay.
So that woman Louise,
mm-hmm,
we'll say, was a romantic partner.
Yes.
Maybe with Dawn? Or maybe with Roland. Or what's his name again? I was going to say Augustus. Artemis.
Augustus.
Augustus Gloop. And obviously cared about that Don. No, not Don guy. The other guy. But whatever happened, something, bad blood, murder, and he's gone. But I think she's the one who paid for the funeral and kind of kept that with her.
Yeah,
all through her years, and obviously for some reason inexplicably kept some proof along with clippings from the case. And whenever she died in 2000s, a family member seen this, maybe thought about bringing it to light.
Sorry, I actually missed a kind of crucial point in this as well.
Okay,
before when Artemis or Roland's checked into the hotel. He checked into this hotel, and when he was talking to the bellboy, he made a comment saying that he was checking into this hotel after leaving another hotel in the area because the rates were too high, or the rent, it was too dear or something in another hotel. Now, he could have shared this hotel with another man, with this guy, Don, or whoever the hell it was, moved to this hotel. So, I don't know. I forgot to mention that point. He had already been in another hotel in the region, Kansas City, in Missouri.
Maybe he's
then he moved to this hotel.
I feel like he
maybe
must,
they had a bit of a fight or
maybe
an argument.
A loan shark thing, because like, who the hell can afford to be staying in hotels like that? He's left home.
True.
2 years.
I can get you like the actual pricing of the hotels if you wish.
I don't even know I'd be able to make sense of it in 2022.
True.
Money.
True. 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 True.
But like, yeah, I don't know. I think I think probably the simplest answer.
$5 a night. Which was the high-end hotel, which would be 100 quid nowadays, money.
What a...
Just a bit over a night. Yeah, it's too much for him to spend.
Fair enough. But yeah, like, I mean, you could... Like, who's living in hotels all the time?
Yeah.
I think probably, like, a lover's spot. Maybe a lover's triangle. But I think...
Yeah.
I think it was, like... I initially thought it was Mob. I can't get that out of my head.
Mob.
It didn't, now I don't think
you're thinking
that.
Dawn?
Yeah. Mm. No, not Dawn. No, like, just, like... Just
he went in with the wrong people?
Yeah, it's just like a mob thing. It's like, yeah, you wronged us. They kill him in his hotel room and just leave it like that. But because they didn't like dispose of the body or really try to do anything, and it sounds like he was stabbed 12 hours before he was discovered, like it was a slow process. I feel like they got him drunk, fucked him up like this, and then like left him.
But that's the thing. How many times did they come into the room while he was lying on the bed? That one time there was dark patches on the bed. He was probably dead at that, or this beating had taken place, and they never did anything. They kept the lights off. As well as that, whenever that he was asked, remember who did this? Who you know slashed at your wrists and who beat you? And he just said nobody.
Yeah, he said I did it myself.
Yeah.
Again, that's what makes me think it's someone he didn't want to like. I don't know. Was this guy a bit maybe? Stupid.
You think?
Maybe, like, you know.
Well,
like, he left home, he got taken advantage of, like,
well, I don't
people
know.
Were writing letters back to his mother
well,
to try
it.
And get money and stuff
but
like
when
that.
But his mother did say that whenever the writing came, these letters came from him to the mother said that it sounded very...
Slangy,
and he wouldn't have spoken like that, which is how she knew they weren't from him. So maybe if they sounded slangy, that would indicate that he's a well-spoken man.
Yeah. Well, that's, I mean, he probably comes from like a decent background, but I don't think that means that he's like intelligent.
True.
You know, you speak the way you're grown up to speak. Even if he isn't like kind of like slow or whatever, I think it's still very possible for someone like that to get taken advantage of by people. And I think that's what's happening. And that's why he didn't want to betray people, because he still considered them to be his friends. Maybe it was like, oh, in his head, this is just a fight that got out of hand, blah, blah, blah. I don't want to like screw over Don, my good buddy Don, and all this.
Whenever they check the rooms, the detectives check the rooms, because I took a look to see if they found anything, you know, when they were doing their kind of detective work. But there was, apart from the cords, they found a safety pin, an unsmoked cigarette, and a full bottle of diluted sulfuric acid.
Jesus, that's a bit unusual.
Now, sulfuric acid is a cleaning agent, I think.
Oh, right, okay. So maybe
I think sulfuric acid also burns off your fingertips.
I'm sure. Well, I mean,
but they found the
sulfuric acid. Sounds
they
extreme.
Also found a hairpin, a woman's hairpin,
perhaps.
Yeah.
That sounds like potentially people were going to come back and clean up their mess. Maybe. But they left him there for a very long time. Maybe they just decided to abandon that idea and just let him die, or maybe they didn't think they'd killed him at all.
True, they just fucked him up and left.
Yep. They're kind of like, teach you a lesson. I don't know what lesson they're teaching him or why.
Dude, it's just such a super strange case. Like, how has it not been solved to this day?
Man, there's probably 1,000 things like this.
Yeah, true. Oh, there's loads of unsolved.
It just never gets solved.
This one's strange,
though. It's just weird because there's so many different
players. Angles. Yeah.
Yeah.
Who the hell is Louise?
I know. Yeah, Louise is intriguing. I feel like she must have been involved and cared a bit about him. Maybe not enough that they weren't going to... I still think he got swindled and they took money off him somehow.
You think so? That's young cub leaves home.
That's it.
Moves to city.
Send letters back to mummy. Try and get some money out of
try
her.
Try and get some money.
Whatever.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know exactly, but...
We're very Hollywood with it, aren't we?
Huh?
We're very Hollywood with the whole thing.
Well, yeah. I mean, but this is like... that's what like people prey on. Like, there's a reason that's one of the like most popular scams today is you get an email from like someone saying, oh yeah, no, it's like you get an email from your child, we'll say, but it's not. It's from a randomer who just knows that you have a child around this age, and they're saying, oh hey, I'm out in Malaysia and I need a bit of money. Can you send me? Yeah.
Can you wire me some?
Can you wire me some money? Like, that's one of the most common scams that exists today.
True.
Like, that's true. Just what people do to try and get money. They know, they play on emotions like that.
True.
But again, like, I don't know. I don't know. Obviously, it's impossible to know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it definitely sounds like. I'll tell you one thing for absolute certain.
Go on.
He did not fall in the bath and cause these injuries like he said he did.
No, no chance whatsoever.
That's all I know, Chris.
Thank you for everybody who voted for this topic this week. There was a lot of you voted for this over our Winnie the Pooh topic again. And I would like to give
Are you a bit angst about that? Like,
I don't know. I just feel like Pooh is just, he just, it may be the best that we never do.
The Pooh Bear story.
It could be the Pooh, yeah. So, I don't know. Maybe we'll put it up next week and see.
I personally will admit I did not vote for it.
Did you vote for this?
I didn't vote this time. Yeah, last time I voted, and I was like, I should probably remain impartial.
I was going to say we should remain impartial, but I don't think it, I think we could vote. We might vote next week.
You should vote for Pooh Bear.
I might vote for Pooh Bear.
It but depends. Then you have too much power because you could choose not to put up Pooh Bear.
Oh no, I'll always put up. It'll always go up against something else until you know, and until Pooh Bear gets picked. Continues. The cycle will continue.
It's never going to be Pooh Bear.
But I want to give a shout out as well to Fintan Connolly, who got in touch and said that he loves this case, loves the story, and that we should check out BuzzFeed did a huge big thing on all the theories, and they delved into all the theories surrounding this case. So if anybody wants any external reading or viewing or whatever from this case,
I couldn't understand why.
I know we could go on so much topic in the last 30 minutes. You can go and check out BuzzFeed. Theories on it. I don't know what you want to call it. But thank you very much. Thank you, Fintan, for getting in touch. Thank you, everybody who listened. This has been episode 10. I was going to say 1046.
We should have done 700 more episodes.
Yeah, would have been perfect. This has been episode 136.
Oh, yeah. 110 more episodes then.
Thank you to everybody who has tuned in for us. If you are watching or listening somewhere where you can give us that little rating, please do so. It would be very much appreciated. Otherwise, we will see you later in the week.
Yeah.
With some more. Goodbye and God bless.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Oh, yeah.